For you. Imagine if you would, it is Saturday morning, and a young child is gleefully playing on the floor with a parent. They're putting each other in headlocks. The child is being thrown high up into the air. They're screaming, giggling, all sorts of things like that. So one parent is on the floor, and then the other parent is standing some distance away, cautioning them to be a little bit more careful. Please don't play so rough. The question is, which parent is on the floor, and which parent is worrying? It's funny. It's funny because I think the answer is obvious. Moms and dads, they both love their children deeply, but very differently. There's no such thing, the experts say, this is not me, this is experts who study this for a living. They say that there's no such thing as parenting in the abstract. There's mothering and there's fathering. And these are oftentimes two very different things. I can count on one hand the times that Jeanette has body slammed Sam. Moms and dads, they can fill in for each other in a pinch, obviously, but dads, again, experts say, dads don't make very good moms, and moms don't make very good dads. Moms and dads each bring unique things to the table when raising children, and children need both the checks and balances of moms and dads in order to grow up optimally. Now, moms are very important for a whole slew of reasons. We could talk for a very long time about all of that, but the problem that we see today isn't that there's not enough mothering. That's not the problem that we generally see today. Almost always, when there's one parent raising children, it's the mother. There's a saying, whenever a child is born, a mother is usually close by, and it's kind of said tongue-in-cheek. The only question is if the father will be also, and if so, for how long? And it's a sad but important question that we need to ask. The problem is that there's not enough fathering. So this morning we're going to explore what is so unique about fathers. What is it that makes them so important? Men, when I say fathers, whether you have children right now or not, whether you will have children, whether you'll never have children, whether you have grandchildren or nieces or nephews or whatever the case may be, you can act as a father in the lives of the many, many children who need it. So as I say fathers, all of men are included. All of us are included. Maybe you grew up in a house without your father. Sadly, 43% of children in the U.S. find themselves in this boat. Maybe you grew up in a home, like this comic, with your father, but he was too busy with work or recreation to spend much time with you. The little boy says, Daddy, and the dad says, Not now, he's working. The little boy is a little bit older, Daddy. The dad says, Not now, son. The boy's a little bit older, he says, Dad. Not now, son. And the dad, much older, says, Son. The son says, Not now, Dad. Not now, Dad. When polled, the majority of fathers admit they don't spend enough time with their children. On average, the statistics say about 1 hour per day. 1 hour per day. What is the result of this dad deprivation that is common in the U.S. in our children? Studies have found that children raised without a father or even minimal father involvement, like we saw the two-parent household, but maybe the dad works too much, or maybe he plays too much. Children raised without a father or minimal father involvement are 5 times more likely to live in poverty, commit crime, commit suicide. They're dramatically more likely to suffer from depression. They're 20 times more likely to end up in prison. 20 times more likely to end up in prison. Dads teach their sons how to be men, how to channel that aggressive masculinity into something productive rather than destructive. About self-control, they teach their children how to delay gratification. Boys who grow up without their fathers are dramatically more likely to have discipline problems, and this as well as emotional problems. And this is despite the fact that dads are less likely than moms to use physical discipline. Now, surprising to me. Dads are less likely to use physical discipline than moms. the vast majority of mass shootings are perpetrated by someone from a broken, fatherless home. A young man named Anthony Sins a few years ago, this was his last Facebook post. "I wish I had a father." He soon went on to be the Oakland killer. Daughters are 7 times more likely to become pregnant as a teen with a minimally involved father or no father in the home. It tends to be the father that scares away the bad boyfriend. It's not because the mothers can't, obviously. It's because fathers tend to be a little bit larger, his voice deeper, and more importantly, he also was once himself a young boy, and he knows what the wrong kind of kid is looking for in his daughter. It's more often the father who is the one protecting her in this regard, and he's also, not only that, he's also modeling what a good relationship should look like to his daughter in that she should not settle for anything less. She should not settle for anything less. Fatherless children are also 9 times more likely to drop out of school. These children will do worse when they study it in every academic area. And in fact, scientists who study this, every possible metric that they can think of to measure, children are worse off without a father in the home. Every possible way they can think to measure it. Dad-deprived children, now, I say all of this, let me quickly say, dad-deprived children, they certainly are not doomed. They can absolutely still succeed, and especially if they have other men in their lives who can come and help fill that role, but they do face a much more difficult life ahead of them, and that's for sure. What's the solution? Wouldn't you know it, the Bible has the answer. Open up to Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, if you haven't already. We're going to be spending the majority of our time there this morning. "Fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." Let's break this verse down. First, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. Literally, do not exasperate your children. Other versions and commentaries say, don't stir up anger in your children. Don't irritate your children and make them resentful. Don't be hard on your children. Don't overcorrect your children. I think it's interesting that this is the first thing that Paul says to fathers, and he says it another time in Colossians. And he doesn't even say the second part. The only instruction that Paul has to fathers in Colossians is, don't exasperate them. Why would God, through Paul, see fit to tell fathers this over and over again? I think it's because fathers have a unique way to irritate, provoke children that we need to be careful of. More on that later. Do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up. And this bring up here is perhaps not the best translation to use in this case. Literally, bring up in the Greek is be out nurturing your children. Fathers, be out nurturing. Fathers, at least historically, tend to think that's the mom's job, but no, God says, fathers, be out nurturing your children. It also can be rendered nourishing to maturity, training, and rearing. Now, notice what God didn't say. Let's be very careful to notice what he didn't say. He didn't say, fathers, don't worry, you can't possibly provoke your children to wrath because you should spend long hours working and leave the nurturing and discipline up to their mother. That's how we treat this verse a lot of times if we read it at all. He didn't say that at all. God expects us as fathers to be so involved and so present in the raising of our children that the possibility of some friction is so likely that he has to warn against it multiple times. That's how involved he wants us to be as fathers. An analysis of 63 studies published in the Journal of Marriage and Family concluded that children benefit more from the quality of time with dad than the quantity of money from dad. Your children can grow up in a two-parent household, but for all practical purposes, grow up without a father. Don't let that be you. And moms, this is very important for moms as well. Moms, encourage your husbands to be more active as fathers. Not only that, but also trust their fathering instinct sometimes. There's a reason that God gave us both mothers and fathers. Sometimes you're right, moms. Sometimes he's right. We need those checks and balances. Don't exclude him, and don't allow him to become merely a second-string parent where he's allowed to father only as long as he fathers how you think a father should father. Does that make sense? I don't want you doing that. You can't have the baby right now. Encourage him to get in there. God made us different for a reason, and he wants us to be involved specifically because we are different. Kids need both parents to grow optimally. Both have something important to offer. Bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. Other versions render this discipline and instruction of the Lord. This is our purpose, fathers. If we do nothing else as fathers, but we do this, we will have been a resounding success. But if we do everything else and fail in this, we will have failed our children. Absolutely and entirely. It will not end up well for us, and it will certainly not end up well for them. How are dads uniquely situated to be able to discipline their kids without exasperating them? That's what Paul is talking about. Fathers, discipline your kids, but be careful. Don't exasperate them as you do this. How are dads different? How are they able to do this? Well, what comes naturally to fathers is dads have a tendency to be more silly, to turn things into games, to playfully tease. And in particular, mothers can do those things some too, not so much teasing. But in particular, this is almost entirely the domain of dads, roughhousing with the kids. You see, for discipline to be to be more than external compliance, like, you do this or else. Okay, fine. In order for it to be more than external compliance, for it to be true discipling, that's where the word comes from, there has to be this underlying relationship that undergirds everything. We need to be able to lean on that relationship to bring about a desire within the child themselves for them to want to change. Not only am I doing this because I have to, not only doing this because Dad is telling me to, but because I love my parents and I want to do the right thing. That's discipling. Dads are more naturally likely to be able to do this because of how they interact with their kids. This might sound silly, but rough and tumble play, in particular, for both boys and girls, but especially boys, this is a motivational drive that God has built in us as humans that dads leverage to build character in their children. And there's an enormous amount of data, research, and science that back up the connection between discipline and roughhousing. And if you have one, generally you'll have the other. This, again, happens to be almost exclusively the domain of dads. It goes without saying also that kids absolutely love it. There's not a day that goes by that Sam doesn't come up to me and say, "Wrestle bed." That means he wants to wrestle in the bed. And sometimes he'll even request specifically, "Body slam." There's rarely ever a day. Even this past Wednesday, he wasn't able to come to Bible study because he was throwing up just constantly. He couldn't keep any food down. But you know what? Multiple times that day, he said, "Wrestle bed." I didn't, because I didn't want him to like throw up on me or something. But wrestle bed. He needs this. He wants this. He'll do almost anything. It's like, what would you do for a Klondike bar? No, kids, what would you do to wrestle with Dad for just 5 minutes? Almost anything. Kids really just can't get enough of this. They will just play up until the point of exhaustion. They need it so much. And this is how dads bond with their children. It's a big part of how they're able to discipline consistently without repeating themselves, without threatening, without resorting to gimmicks like counting, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We don't have to do that generally. The website has an article recently that I think summarizes the benefits of roughhousing pretty well. Roughhousing develops resilience in children. Helping your child bounce back from failures and adapt to unpredictable situations is one of the very best things you can do as a parent. Roughhousing requires your child to be able to adapt quickly to unpredictable situations. One minute they might be riding you like a horse, and the next minute they could be swinging upside down. Playtime is a fun and safe place to teach your kids that failure is often just temporary. It's a temporary state, and victory goes to the person who keeps at it and learns from his mistakes. Do you think those are important principles to learn as a Christian? It also helps children learn how to manage and deal with pain and discomfort. It's coming our way, whether we like it or not. And that's very important to learn. You shouldn't intentionally hurt your kids when you're wrestling with them, obviously. Okay, but little bumps and scrapes are bound to happen. And dads are less likely to cuddle their kids and kiss their boo-boos. Instead, dads have a tendency to distract, to toughen them up with humor or some other task, and kids really get tougher. Kids who don't have this roughhousing, they'll cry even when they're not hurt, when something just surprising happens, when they don't have this. They don't know how to regulate their emotions. They don't know what hurts and what doesn't hurt, and what hurts but you can take it, but what hurts and really I need help. They're not able to distinguish those things. Roughhousing teaches social intelligence, and this one really actually surprised me. It's fathers who teach their children how to regulate their emotions and teaches their children about empathy, not mothers. Now, mothers are much more likely to show empathy to children, but fathers are generally the ones who teach their child how to empathize. Roughhousing teaches children empathy. These kids learn to pick up and interpret social cues to make sure everybody's having fun, especially if there's multiple kids wrestling all at the same time. Because the moment someone gets hurt, or the moment someone starts crying, the fun stops, right? So in order to keep the fun going, they take turns to cooperate, and they learn how to get along. It also teaches them how to be gracious in victory and gracious in defeat. Very important social skills. If the kid is trying really hard, dads will often let them win and congratulate them. Wow, man, you really elbow dropped me good there. Good job, son. So if the kid is trying hard, you know, you're going to let the kid win and encourage them. If you try as hard as you can, you will get there. It's a very important lesson to learn. But if the kid is kind of trying halfway, do you think the dad's going to let them win? Not a chance. Not a chance. Or if the kid gloats, going to get smacked down. Going to get smacked down. It's very important to learn. If the kid is a sore loser, I say it facetiously, obviously, don't smack your kids. If he's a sore loser, you know, dad probably won't play with him again until he adjusts his attitude. So the child learns to regulate himself and work along with other people, and he learns to be happy no matter what the outcome. He's happy with the process. Roughhousing, surprisingly, teaches your kids morality. Kids learn the appropriate use of strength and the difference between play and actual aggression. It's okay to jump around and get excited and, you know, climb on dad's back, but it's not okay to bite or to kick or stick your thumb in somebody's eye. Those things are not okay. They learn boundaries and the difference between right and wrong. If they start hitting hard or below the belt or becoming malicious, fun stops. They don't want the fun to stop, so they quickly get back in line. Okay, sorry, let's keep wrestling. Roughhousing bonds children to fathers and fathers to children, and that aids in discipline. Again, roughhousing offers dads a chance to show affection to their kids in a fun and playful environment. When you throw your kids up in the air and catch them or swing them upside down, you're building your child's trust in you. Now, some child don't like this, so don't terrify them. But if your kid likes this, you know, you can't do enough of it. As they take part in these somewhat risky activities, your kids learn that they can trust you to keep them safe. Very important. As fathers, as parents. With this bond built, then, dads can go say, go clean up your blocks, go brush your teeth, get ready for bed, and then we can wrestle. This kind of leveraging the fun dad playtime bond, go do what you need to do, and we can do what you want to do. This is how they learn how to delay gratification and learn self-control. Very, again, very, very important things as Christians to know. Okay. Enough about roughhousing. How else are dads and moms typically different? They're very different when it comes to boundaries, enforcing boundaries in particular. Dr. Warren Farrell, this is somebody who counsels parents and children. He had this funny story. He said, "Moms often ask me, why is it that when I speak, nothing happens, but when their dad speaks, kids drop everything and obey? It makes moms feel disrespected and taken for granted. It's not dad's deeper voice. Dads who don't enforce boundaries are also ignored. Perhaps the most important reason is because moms are more likely to set boundaries, whereas dads are more likely to enforce boundaries. For example, although a mom is more likely to set an early bedtime, single moms are 3 times as likely as single dads to let their young children get away with late or irregular bedtimes. One boy half joked, "My mom warns and warns. It's like she cries wolf. My dad gives us one warning, and then he becomes the wolf." Dr. Farrell continued with his interesting story. Harry, a young boy, was asked by a therapist why he thought he got to bed later with his mom than his dad. He explained, With mom, I can get away with it.
How?
Well, with mom, I say, like, I need water, or I have a tummy ache. So you manipulate her? Harry grinned. Don't those excuses get a little bit old? Harry's grin expanded, as if delighting in his cleverness. Oh, I have a whole bunch of excuses, like, oh, I have to get my homework done, or just one more story. Or I tell her, I love it when you read me Where the Wild Things Are. Harry paused and then boasted, I have a real sense of what will work. Sooner or later, mom gives in. Do you use those ploys with dad? No, they don't work with him. How's that? Dad'll announce, bedtime is 9:30. But I know that whatever time I have left after I do my homework and get all ready for bed is wrestle time. Or I get a story, or pretty much whatever I want. So I rush to get everything done. Dad checks my homework while I get ready for bed. If it's okay, we get to wrestle or read. If not, I gotta go back to homework. But when it's 9:30, he gives me a big hug and a kiss, and that's it. Once Harry saw he could manipulate his mom for a better deal, it was just a matter of who had more energy. So Harry always won. And therefore, Harry always lost. A child who learns that a boundary that's been set is still negotiable develops manipulative negotiating skills. If he or she doesn't, quote unquote, win right away, with enough persistence, they can ultimately exhaust the parent and win. This is most frequently characterized by the mom, by the exhausted mom finally yelling in frustration, I said no! Then the child, of course, continues to press. The mom loses it and creates a punishment too big for the crime. Then, feeling guilty, she fails to follow through on the anger-generated punishment, and in an effort to beg forgiveness and her natural desire to nurture, she bends over backwards to please the child. The child has won. Therefore, the child has lost. What's the outcome? A disrespect for both boundaries and the parent who sets them. The result is a coercive relationship with the parent, and the child's disrespect turns into contempt. Children need dads who enforce boundaries like a fish needs water. So dads are more naturally boundary enforcers, but the good news is this is not patented male technology. Some moms are great at this. Some dads are not great at this. But just generally speaking, statistically, dads, this is your territory. What else? Mom's comfort, dad's challenge. Mom's comforts, dad's challenge. Kids need both. So metaphorically speaking, a mom tends to be the one who will give a fish to someone if they're hungry, even if that means the mom has to go hungry herself. A dad's nurturing instinct, on the other hand, is, if someone's hungry, I'll teach him to fish so he can fix it himself. In other words, rather than lowering the challenge to meet the child where he or she is, dads will want to raise the child to meet the challenge wherever it is. A first grader named Jack one night complained to his parents that his teacher hated him. Mom's immediate reaction was, oh, that's okay, sweetie. There's another first grade teacher. We'll call the principal in the morning. And we will we'll just get you changed for another class. It'd be terrible for you it's so hard to learn if your teacher hates you, obviously. Dad's reaction, on the other hand, was rather than to rescue his son, he wanted his son to face the conflict and deal with it. What he did was he asked Jack, he said, Jack, if we were to talk to your teacher, what would she say about you? That surprised Jack. And it turns out that Jack's teacher didn't hate him. Jack was being disruptive, so she moved his seat, and he didn't like that. Jack was, with his parents' help, he was able to face the problem and fix it for himself. He talked with his teacher, and he learned how to empathize with her. He faced an uncomfortable problem, but he made changes, accepted responsibility, and built his character. Fathers don't necessarily want their children to be in better situations. They want their children to be better, whatever the situation. Another couple was at a restaurant with their toddler, and he saw something he wanted, a delicious-looking red bottle, hot sauce. Of course, mom and dad said, no, you can't have hot sauce. It's too spicy. That meant nothing to the toddler. So the toddler obviously like, what? Okay, so fine. Let's let him try it. And the child quickly tried it and immediately regretted it. So what happened there? Was the child harmed? No. He felt a little bit of discomfort for a little while, but he recovered. But more importantly, he taught himself a valuable lesson, and it didn't take lecturing, it didn't take prodding, it didn't take yelling. He learned it all by himself. Trust mom and dad. If they say, no, that's dangerous, or no, that's spicy, maybe there's a reason, and maybe I should listen to them. If instead, on the other hand, if the parents snatch the bottle away, no, you know you're supposed to listen to us, you're not supposed to do what we tell you not to do, all the child is going to hear is, my parents are no fun, and they never let me do what I want. And then when they're not looking, then I'll get into some fun. There are some situations, obviously, when children need rescuing, they're in over the head, and proper reaction, we just have to swoop in and rescue. We can't let them suffer those consequences, like if they're running into oncoming traffic, for instance. But whenever possible, children are allowed to grow if they're left room to deal with the consequences of their decisions, both good and bad. And perhaps with some guidance, deal with the situation themselves. Dads are really great at this. And by the way, interestingly, this is how our Heavenly Father fathers us. He's there to rescue us when we can't possibly do it ourselves. Think Jesus dying on the cross for our sins. We couldn't have done that for ourselves. So God said, I'll do it for you. Or think about Exodus. My people are enslaved. They can't get out by themselves. I'm going to help them. Right? Dads are great at this. This is their natural reaction. On the other hand, though, when God does swoop in and rescue us, he does so minimally. He does so minimally. What happened during Exodus, for instance? He parted the Red Sea, but he said, y'all got to walk across. He could have just picked them up and, oh, it's okay, shh, it's okay, you know, put them here, you're safe now. He could have done that, but he parted the Red Sea and y'all, okay, now run away from these guys. That's what he did. What did he do when they were hungry? He could have just zap, you know, here's a grilled cheese sandwich. He could have done that. No, he sent manna from heaven. He said, go get it, cook it, and feed yourself. He intervened when they couldn't do it for themselves, but he intervened minimally. Where they were capable, he stopped, and maybe even a little bit short of that, so that they can grow there. That is exactly how our Heavenly Father fathers us. Again, this isn't patented dad technology. Moms are very often great at this too. But again, dads tend to be the ones who are more willing to allow their child to suffer just a little bit, in order to learn and grow. And this is immeasurably valuable to our children. If we always rescue or do for our kids what they can do for themselves, we encourage them to be lazy, and they turn into entitled, self-absorbed little monsters. So we can't do that, but neither, on the other hand, let's remember what Paul said, do not provoke your children to wrath. So discipline them, yes, but don't provoke them to wrath. There's this balance that Paul has in mind. I think this is partly what he was talking about here, when we can't exasperate them. So if the child is here in you know, we as parents, if we always lower the challenge to where the child is, we encourage them to be lazy. We can't do that. But if the child is here and the problem is way out there, now what then? Fathers can do that sometimes, like, go do this impossible thing, and don't come home until you get it done. No, that's exasperating. The child will tend to be crushed under this weight of guilt and worthlessness, and I'm never good enough. And, you know, fathers, we need to balance. We need the motherly balance in that regard. If the distance between where they are and where they need to be is too great, it's just crushing. It's exasperating. You want to push them because you want them to be more than what they currently are, but you don't want to crush them with constant failure. Aim high, make the goal difficult, yes. But make it doable. Make it doable. To wrap things up, fathers, we are important. God placed us in the lives of our children for a reason. But remember that even if we don't out and out abandon our kids, we can essentially do that. If we leave the rearing up to the mother, if we're involved minimally, if we're more interested in work or play or anything else, you've abandoned your children, and they need you. We haven't talked about salvation this morning, but if we can help you obey the gospel or help you spiritually in any regard, we'd love to. We'd love to do that. Would you let us know? You can let us know after worship is over, or if you'd prefer right now, as we together stand and sing in order to encourage you.